Who with it now? Welcome, one and all, to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, PrideofDetroit.com, Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook, your SB Nation website, blog, podcast, everything you need for the Detroit Lions, news, analysis, opinion. Back in here again, we are on the road to the Super Bowl. Yep. We are on the road to WrestleMania.
Yes.
Nope.
That's weird that we are in disagreement. I'm not sure why we are in disagreement, because we clearly are on the road to WrestleMania after last night's Royal Rumble.
We are on the road to WrestleMania, and we're on the road to Super Bowl. Both can be true. Jeremy Reisman, our fearless leader.
Those are forks in the path, my friends. Forks in the path.
They follow the same road.
Nope.
You know the Super Bowl champion is going to be getting a WWE title belt.
Not my champion.
Oh,
that is the person who just does not like joy. That's Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader at Detroit Online. The other man, that's Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore POD. Ryan, I know we talk a lot about Shaq being an appearance sometime for WrestleMania or whatever, but we maybe see someone from one of these two teams. Could you see ever someone from the NFL going into this kind of stuff, as a guest appearance? Who has that kind of cachet, who is a very big boy? Because I'm just thinking about, because J.J. Watt wouldn't do that. Well, he respects the troops.
Right. Well, hold on. John Cena respects the troops, too.
He does.
I think
tag team.
Right. I think J.J. Watt and John Cena are the perfect tag team.
That would be amazing.
Are you guys trying to lose all of our listeners in the first 1 minute?
We got some Lions topics, but now I wanna figure this out, because every other big star that I would know from the NFL is like a quarterback or a wide receiver. They don't really make good wrestlers.
Yeah.
I hope J.J. Watt is the biggest wrestling fan.
Well, that would be good, though, because that would be I would get to see a tag team with him and John Cena.
Well,
maybe here, like a USO show.
Here's one of the best things that's kind of tucked away in wrestling history, is that in WrestleMania 11, the main event was Bam Bam Bigelow versus Lawrence Taylor. And Lawrence Taylor was accompanied to the ring by some really big names, like Reggie White, Carl Banks, Ken Norton Jr., Detroit's own Chris Spielman. Yes, they all accompanied him to the ring. Wrestling and...
Was he barking?
He was groveling. He was talking about how you can recognize whether a play is a run or a pass based on the way the lineman reacts. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say a suplex or a submission hold. That's it. Yes, I stopped the conversation.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's move on to the Lions topic then. So here's what we're talking about on this show. By the way, I'm Chris Lemieux at Adequate Host on Twitter. I'd never really get to introduce myself, so let's talk about what we've got on the show today. We've got a big question about the Lions. I'm already seeing people kind of dive in with the Lions and the draft already, but you've got a question we've got to resolve first in that regard. We're also doing our positional review on this show, and we've got some interesting tidbits to talk about from the NFL and from everything else later. We're going to try to recap some of the stuff from the weekend. We're going to be talking about a hilarious move that the 49ers pulled, and some other stuff. And of course, we've got some reviews to read, and we've got a mailbag to get through. But first, guys, I know Lions Twitter has turned its attention squarely towards the draft. That's all I'm seeing. And to be fair, we're feeding that frenzy. We're putting out the mock drafts. We're getting people hyped up. Everyone's got their own guy now, but it's coming around. I don't know if you guys ready for draft season?
Never.
I think we're on the road to the NFL draft.
Not yet. Gotta wait for the Super Bowl, right?
Not if your team's not playing in it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think people are getting itchy. They're not even waiting for the Super Bowl anymore for Lions fans, but In my opinion, there is a question you need to resolve before talking about the draft. Because, like, I've already seen people, they're already locking into certain positions in the draft, right? It's like, I want a cornerback, or I want this guy, a linebacker.
Or if you're Jeremy, I want a tight end in the first round.
Man, I'm just going to let you have it. I'm going to let you have it.
Because it's not wrestling talk. Because it's not wrestling talk, you let me have it.
Yep. Let you have it on that.
But anyways,
you need to resolve one thing before doing that, and that is a bit of free agency, and that is the fact that your entire right side of the offensive line, you need to figure out what's going to happen with that in free agency. Because, yeah, no, sorry, Jeremy, go
on. Well, I was just going to say, in free agency in general, that's usually kind of the bigger section to your offseason in terms of immediate impact. If you're talking about the 2017 season, the biggest moves are going to be made in free agency, especially with this team this year with the amount of cap size they have. But as you were saying, there's kind of a one particular issue that's pressing.
Well, I mean, I get why people move on to the draft very quickly. It's very sexy. It's new stuff. It's potential. It's not anything you've seen before. Whereas free agency, I think that, I don't want to say it scares people, but it makes people like, oh, we have to talk about what these guys are worth, and oh, I don't like anyone because they didn't win everything, so I don't like a lot of these guys. And there's a lot of that going around, but your entire right side, two of your three starters are up, their contracts are up going into free agency, and free agency is a big deal. It's a very big deal, and we shouldn't be skipping over it to go right to the draft. Because if you can't lock down your other tackle or your other guard, I think this year proved that you might have to think about what you're going to do in the draft. You can't figure out what to replace them with in free agency, because I don't think Laken Tomlinson's going to be taken over if you let Larry Warford go. It's not happening. Joe Dahl, I don't think that's happening. Who else is going to be the tackle?
That's the bigger question to me. I think they would try to give Laken Tomlinson another shot if they can't retain Warford. I really do.
Yeah.
But right tackle is like, it's a big need right now, and it's always been a need with this team, so it'll be interesting what they do with Riley Reiff, because we brought this up a couple weeks ago on the site. Like, it's going to be tough to retain him. Some people might peg him as a left tackle, which means someone might be able to throw a lot of money at him.
I mean, right. he has played that too. And I'm just looking through the roster, but like, is Cornelius Lucas like the only other person who plays right tackle that the Lions have?
Corey Robinson,
yeah, okay. Corey Robinson, who was an ERFA, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, those guys are almost guaranteed to come back. You know, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, but I think that I've just kind of put off the idea of having to replace Riley Reiff for so long, because I think it's maybe the most daunting a task of anybody to replace on that offensive line, whether or not it's Warford or Reiff, just because it is a very important position. You know, I think when Jeremy did a player profile on Riley Reiff when we first started doing those for the site, you know, he talked about how the money discrepancy in terms of how much left tackles are being paid in free agency and how much right tackles are being paid, that gap is starting to slowly but surely narrow in terms of dollars, but there is a great importance on being able to have, you know, athletic guys out on the edge, you know, that can block. And I think something earlier that Jeremy said too was about, you know, in free agency, that is where you make your immediate impacts. Like, you look at the New York Giants last year in free agency, they made huge splashes going out and getting Olivier Vernon, going out and getting Janoris Jenkins. You know, they picked up Leon Hall. When you make moves like that, they got Snacks Harrison too. When you make moves like that, the type of immediacy you see in terms of your just talent level increasing, and their defense went from middle of the pack to top of the league. So, free agency is going to be incredibly important for the Lions, and whether or not the answer can be found for Warford or Reiff, I mean, that kind of remains to be seen. But, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think that free agency is the way to go to pick up an offensive lineman, or one or the other? Is it guard? Is it tackle? I mean, I don't know.
It's a hard question to ask, and I think another hard question to answer really is, what's your ideal offensive line? Like, if money weren't an object, would you want these two to return? Because while the offensive line was improved last year, it wasn't great, especially run blocking. It was pretty terrible, in fact. So I think you're kind of caught in this situation where you don't want to overpay for these guys. They were okay. You wouldn't mind moving on, but the lines have kind of been stuck for the past decade looking for answers, especially on the right side of that line, and getting rid of two guys who are at least starting worthy, it's kind of a tough decision. I think at this point I want to prioritize tackle. I want to prioritize, I think, Reef coming back, to be honest, because he had a lot thrown at him last year. He had to change his position from the get-go, from as soon as they drafted Taylor Decker, and he wasn't great on the right side, but he wasn't bad. He was, I think he met and maybe exceeded expectations for, you know, just having 1 year to prep at that. So they might have to get in a bidding order to keep him. I don't know, but I think I would try to make that a priority right now over Larry Warford. And also because you do have Lakin Tomlinson, who's sitting there on a rookie contract still, you can hope he has a turnaround, which might be a risk, but you have Joe Dahl there if Tomlinson doesn't work out. I just think they're better prepared for Warford to leave than they are for Reef, and that's why I would prioritize Reef.
In terms when it comes to Lakin Tomlinson, I guess the question is that, because a Lions fan would say, like some of the Lions fans, especially those who are, I would say, impatient, would say, well, that's not good enough. It's not good enough. Lakin Tomlinson at right guard is not good enough to win you anything or do anything or go anywhere. So it would be a demand that you've got to do better than Lakin Tomlinson.
Well, right? that's where you'll get caught, though, because I think that fans were a little bit too spoiled with how well Taylor Decker played. Like, that doesn't normally happen with offensive linemen in their first year, let alone a guy playing on the left side. And I think the reason that fans should at least be open to the idea of letting Warford walk and moving Tomlinson over the right side is because that is his natural position, right? So, I mean, when he was drafted, he was a right guard. He wasn't a left guard. So you want to talk about making the transition from, you know, college to NFL? We just heard about how Joe Dahl, the reason he didn't get any playing time is because nothing of what he learned at Washington State transferred over to what this offense was here in Detroit. So he had to learn everything from scratch. He had to completely rebuild his entire knowledge of playing on the offensive line from scratch. So I think a lot of this hinges too on how confident they are in putting Graham Glasgow at left guard. Like, are you 100% sold that he is going to be your left guard? Because I don't know if I'm entirely sold on that. I thought he played well, but I don't think that he played well enough to be like, okay, we can just throw him in as the starter from the get-go.
I mean, they have to, though, at this point. He was a third-round pick. I mean, that's a lot of investment, and to give up on that after a year would be kind of crazy.
It'd be kind of crazy to give up on the guard that you drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. Yeah,
that's true, too, and that's why I think Warford is probably as good as gone, to be honest. And especially with that Brian Winters contract that was signed earlier in January, you know, he's commanding around $8 million a year. I don't think the Lions want to spend that much when they have two rookie guards, if you consider Glasgow a guard at this point, three if you include Joe Dahl, that are on rookie contracts. They're first to fifth round picks. They're nice and cheap options, and I agree that Tomlinson's play obviously wasn't good enough last year, but this is a team where you have to prioritize your needs, and there are a lot more needs. So if you can cut a little spending in the hopes that your young guys are going to get better on the offensive line, maybe now you can spend a ton of money on defense where it drastically needs to be spent.
Well, the Lions right now, as we sit here, they have about $36 million in cap space. So the idea of going after, what you guys are painting the picture for me is the Lions, if they want to move on from guard and save money, they they got the options. Like they don't need to pursue a guard if they want to go a different direction or see what they have. Tackle, though, that is a far higher priority. But they do have that cap space where they could make something happen. Like right now, $36 million, that's probably before you take anyone off the books right now for what if they decide to walk in free agency or whatever. Before you sign anyone to rookie contracts for in the draft, and of course before the admittedly sizable new contract that Stafford will probably be getting. So, I mean, but still, there's still enough there to go after a right tackle. So, I mean, I don't know. I haven't really done my searches as to, like, what kind of tackles would be available in free agency, but it sounds like, I don't know. I mean, we can only, of course, speak for the fans. I don't know if the fans would really want to see another offensive lineman being drafted in the first three rounds again for, like, what, the third year in a row?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a lot of draft capital. I mean, they've spent a first to third round draft pick on pretty much everyone who's currently sitting there on the starting offensive line. So, I mean, I think most people would agree, like, you build a team through the trenches, but at this point, like, there's so many other needs that I think they're going to have to try and hope that some of that young talent that they've had that hasn't quite developed yet makes a leap, because there's other stuff that needs to be attended to.
Well, I think we can leave it there and move on. We're going to move on to our positional review now. We're going to be talking about everyone's favorite wide receivers.
Shiny baubles.
Pretty things. Shiny things. And the Lions spent well last free agency. They were really looking to replace a very big Megatron-sized hole. And we all talked for a while about how the offense was improved without post-Calvin Johnson, but we need to take a look at a little closer in there and see what we can come up with. So stick around. We'll be right back. All right, continuing on here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, we were looking up a couple of free agents during the break. Ryan, do you want to share one name that the Lions could potentially go after?
Sure, they could definitely target Gazdor Sherliss. I'm sure all very familiar with Gazdor Sherliss. Would you believe it if I told you that he's 32 years old?
How many years has he been? He's racked up some years in the league now, man.
Life comes at you fast when you're Gazdor Sherliss. He made decent money last year. All right, we're on.
Who was he playing for? No, who was he playing for last year?
He was protecting Jameis Winston.
Really? Oh, he's been in Tampa. Okay.
Yeah, I think he spent some time with the Colts, too, though, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Andrew Luck? Yeah.
Was he there when Caldwell was there?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Oh, no. What have we done? All right.
Jeremy is frantically Googling right now.
I have never seen a man Google this fast. Like, he is very intense right now. But
2013 to 2014.
That was a year after. That was after Caldwell was there then.
No, well, Caldwell was there for 2013.
No, he wasn't. He was with the Ravens.
Was he?
Yes. God. Yeah. Yeah. He was with the Ravens. Yeah. He was with the Ravens 2012 to 2013.
You're totally right.
Yeah.
You're totally right.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Mike Caldwell.
Hold on. Can we stop for one moment? Because Jim Caldwell's large adult son just knew more about football than Jeremy Reisman.
Wait, we're not cutting that part out? I don't get to have that part cut out?
No, you don't.
Damn it.
You know, the funny thing is we never explained the large adult son thing.
I don't think
like,
we should.
That had you're, some play just, in the comments.
I don't even think that we should explain the fact that you're Jim Caldwell's large adult son, because then it kind of just loses its paternal essence.
It's self-evident, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't know. I haven't pinned the tweet that has the photographic evidence. I would have to go back and find it.
Resemblance is uncanny. Like, you should do a commercial for one of the, like, genealogy, like, family tree stuff.
You mean the family tree site that Andrew Cotto is using to find all of our home addresses?
Nobody is safe.
Yeah, nobody is safe. Andrew, he's a fed. He will find you.
By the way, yeah, we should send out a warning to all of our listeners. Do not put a negative comment on Andrew Cotto's articles, or he will find you.
Hey, all I know is that there was a point in which I said, you know what, Andrew, I totally believe that the Packers are allowed to get away with more holding than the rest of the league because they're trained to do so. I just had to go with it.
Speaking of pass interference, you know what players get pass interfered?
That was awkward, but...
Wide receivers.
Well, let's talk about the wide receivers for the Lions. So this was year one AM after Megatron. And the Lions made quite a bit of splash. You don't like that. No one likes that. Kirk Cousins doesn't like that. The Lions made a lot of splash in free agency last year for wide receiver. First, it was getting Marvin Jones, who was one of the two big wide receiver free agents out of Cincinnati, along with Mohamed Sanu, who is in the Super Bowl.
Oh, we got the wrong Bengal wide receiver.
Clearly. Actually, Sanu hasn't... I don't know. Sanu hasn't done much there, but... So, along with Marvin Jones, they went out and got Anquan Boldin to play in the slot, and they still had Golden Tate, and TJ Jones kind of came on and off the roster at times, like he came up eventually, but I think the only one on the roster besides those three was Andre Roberts. Those were the four wide receivers they ran with to start. And of course, TJ Jones came up. So let's talk about those guys and how they performed. So who do you want to start with? Because in my mind right now, the one who's established himself as a number one on this roster is probably... I mean, it's hard to pick a number one between Jones and Tate, but I have to lean towards Golden Tate.
He was certainly the more consistent receiver. I mean, he went through a couple droughts here and there, but as the season went on, it became pretty apparent that the Lions wanted to use him as the centerpiece of their passing game. And so, yeah, he's certainly the most safe at this point. He's certainly the one I think the Lions are most happy with at this point. You can call him a number one, number two. They use him functionally different than a typical number one, but we're just talking about labels here. I think Tate's quote unquote the number one.
Well, what do you make of his performance from this year, though? Because I thought he definitely stepped up. We saw some of that with him and Matthew Stafford like last season. They started to turn it on, especially when Calvin Johnson was out of the lineup. But I don't know. I thought this year he was doing a lot more for the offense. I thought they were using him, as you say, in very different situations. Maybe not always effectively, like those jet sweeps that never worked, but they were kind of getting him involved in very different ways.
Yeah, I mean, they were. And, people, like you said, were getting pretty sick and tired and fed up with all of the gadget plays that were being drawn up by JBC to Golden Tate, because at the end of the day, it seems like you really just need to get the ball in his hands because he has this shiftiness to him. He's so agile. And once he gets the ball, it's all about getting upfield with him. And he, like I said, once he gets the ball and he gets the ball in space, he can make some pretty incredible things happen. I think that where Lions fans kind of got caught up with Golden Tate was at the beginning of the season, because when he started out kind of flat, he had a decent game against Indianapolis. Tennessee, he wasn't really, he was dropping passes. The Green Bay game happens, and it's like through the first 3 weeks of the season, it's kind of the Marvin Jones show. And then week four happens against Chicago, and you have the miscommunication. You have him getting quote unquote, benched. Jim Caldwell didn't say that, but we can all read between the lines. And then the Philadelphia game happens, nothing really, and then all of a sudden it's just this breakout performance against Los Angeles. So I think where Lions fans' expectations of Golden Tate was at the beginning of the season is they were expecting him to automatically be that guy who they saw pick up all the slack when Calvin Johnson went down. When Calvin Johnson went down, it seemed like Golden Tate was an easy fill-in. You still had a very dynamic receiver who was capable of, performing at a high level, putting out statistical outputs that would make you excited about the prospects of him getting getting into a situation that he had this season, being the quote unquote, if you want to label him, he was the number one wide receiver going into the season. When he didn't meet those expectations at the beginning of the season, I think people soured on him. I mean, how many people like, I mean, you guys pick it up from here, but how many people were talking about getting rid of Golden Tate, you know, after the first 4 weeks, especially after that Bears game?
We all covered it. Yeah, we all covered it. But I mean, I don't know. I think if there is going to be anyone you name number one, it is Golden Tate. Like, you got to put out a depth chart. It is Golden Tate number one. Just like, he's proven himself to be that. He's not an elite number one, but he's a good one. And that kind of leads us to 1A, even though this one was the one that the Lions spent all the money on. And as you pointed out, Ryan, Marvin Jones, he had a very hot start to the season. Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong, like, ESPN was showing, like, in those first three games, they were, like, waking out, and it's like, man, he could beat Calvin Johnson's numbers from last year.
Right, I mean, he led the league in receiving yards, I think, through 3 weeks, maybe even four.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think it was just by design that he slowly got, I don't want to say completely phased out of the offense, but like I was saying before, this just kind of became the Golden Tate show. Like, he had almost 40 more receptions than Marvin Jones did, even though yardage totals were actually pretty close. I have to say, I was disappointed in Marvin Jones this year. I know total numbers, 930 yards, four touchdowns. That's probably about what I expected to begin with. Maybe I expected a little bit more, but it's hard to deny that he disappeared in the second half of the season, and it wasn't a health thing. It was him just, like,
it's what he did in Cincinnati. It was always a problem I had with him from the signing, is that when he was in Cincinnati, he would do that stuff. He would just be one day he'd have a great game, and the next game he would just have nothing. He would do that in Cincinnati. And I think he seems to struggle with certain cornerback matchups. But I guess the big question is, do you think, like, you know, it's always a question of deserve. Do you think he matched up to the contract the Lions gave him in the first year? Or do you think he needs to kind of develop with this offense a little more?
That's a hard question to ask on his first year. Sure. He's obviously still developing chemistry with Stafford, although it looked like him and Stafford were locked in from the get-go. I don't know. When you sign a long contract like that, you don't sign it just for their first year. So I don't want to say that, you know, it was a bad move or anything yet. But he was expected to kind of take the top off of these defenses. Obviously, Golden Tate is the short yardage guy who can get all the yak. They needed Marvin Jones to be that guy to go deep, get some separation, haul in some contested balls. He hauled in a couple of contested balls, but he wasn't getting that separation consistently where Stafford felt comfortable throwing it to him often. I mean, I'm looking at his game log right now, and he had, you know, by far the majority of his games had four or less catches. That's not good enough. It needs to be better.
Okay, and then, oh, Ryan, did you have something to say on Jones?
Yeah, so this is the thing, is I heard Jeremy mention the idea of separation. You know, Marvin Jones was supposed to come in and be the guy who was going to take the top off of the defenses, but a really interesting batch of stats came out from NFL.com because they finally released their next gen stats. And they came out with their list of the top 10 wide receivers in tight coverage. Now, they define tight coverage as being less than 1 yard of separation between themselves and the corner. Jones finished third in catch rate among receivers in tight coverage. But I think a lot of that was just because he had so many opportunities where he was, you know, in a position to catch the ball in tight coverage because he wasn't getting a whole lot of separation. You know, it says here that, you know, nevertheless, Jones did show an ability to win the ball in tight coverage, hauling in 59% of his targets. He had 27 targets where he had less than a yard of separation. Now, he only had 103 targets on the year. So that's a good chunk of his you know, targets that were, you know, because he couldn't get a whole lot of separation from cornerbacks. And I would just like to see, maybe he's not the guy who can generate the type of separation that we maybe thought he could. Maybe it just needs to be schemed better. You know, it'd be interesting to go back and look at those first three games to see, you know, kind of what way they were using Marvin Jones and whether or not it was different from, you know, subsequent weeks after.
All right. And that kind of leads us into kind of going down the depth chart. So we know Tate, Jones, they are both set. Let's talk about some of the other wide receivers. Let's start with Anquan Boldin? First off, big question, do you even think he's going to be back next year?
I think it's entirely up to him. I think the Lions are going to want him back. I think he certainly lived up to expectations.
Yeah, if he comes back, it will be with the Lions. Just
well, if he chooses Lions, like at this point, it's Anquan Boldin's choice which team. If he wants to go to someone who he views as more of a contender, he could probably go there.
But, I mean, it's hard to deny just the massive impact he had on the offense this year. Right, Ryan?
Like, absolutely.
It was huge.
Yeah, I mean, I just talked about that that article of the top 10 wide receivers in tight coverage. Anquan Boldin was number 6 in the league. 56.7% catch rate on throws on targets where there was tight coverage. And how many times were we looking up and seeing a 3rd-and-5 or a 3rd-and-6, and it was Anquan Boldin catching a 5-yard slant and making sure he got past the sticks, or extending a drive because he just has some hands that are they're magical. And mm-hmm. if you can get Anquan Boldin back, if he wants to come back, if he's healthy and he's willing to come back, I don't see why you wouldn't bring him back. I really don't.
I think there's one argument not to bring him back, and that's that you have Eric Ebron and you want him to eventually to take that role, because a lot of people are talking about Ebron's year and it was soured by a couple key drops towards the end there, but he took a big step last year. But the one thing he didn't see market improvement is in the red zone. And a lot of people feel that Anquan Boldin kind of took over that Eric Ebron role in the red zone. You know, Anquan Boldin had 8 touchdowns, I think. Ebron had 2, maybe 3.
Yeah. 8. No, Boldin had a lot.
Ebron had 1 touchdown reception.
Oh. Okay,
and he had 1 rushing. He had 1 That's rushing right. touchdown on the jet sweep.
That's right.
Yeah, but no, I totally agree. I mean, he had the touchdown taken away against Tennessee, for what it's worth. But yeah, Anquan Boldin was 4th in the NFL in red zone targets.
So I mean, I guess it comes down to a question. Obviously, you can have both. If you want Eric Ebron to kind of develop into that red zone threat too. And maybe if you have Boldin, that becomes easier to do. I'm not sure. But at the same time, I think the Lions need to start obviously considering lining up Ebron maybe exclusively as that slot receiver, not even toying with the idea of him as a tight end and bringing in that blocking tight end. We'll talk about tight ends later in the year, but I mean, Ebron, they don't want him blocking. He's not good at it. He's not going to be good at it. So sure. I don't really see why they should even fake it at this point, to be honest. Like, make him a Jimmy Graham. It's fine.
All right. And this kind of brings us, we're kind of going down the roster here now, and this kind of brings us kind of rapid fire to a last few. So Andre Roberts, what do we think of him?
Not replaceable.
Pretty much. Like,
yeah. But I mean, let's give him some credit. He had a good year since special teams, right?
Totally. Absolutely. Like, he had a solid year, especially returning punts. He was one of the best in the league. Absolutely. Yeah. Do I think he's replaceable? Absolutely.
Okay, after that, the other big one to talk about is TJ Jones. Obviously, wasn't a good year for him. He started out in the practice squad. But let's see. So
I've seen everything I need to see about TJ Jones to have my opinion made up of him.
He had a couple of good plays, but that's all we can really say about him.
And he's I believe an exclusive rights free agent, so you'll probably see him in camp. You probably will not see him on the final 53.
And before the Lions signed Anquan Boldin, a lot of us were like, yeah, we'll be fine with TJ Jones as their number 3 receiver. Can you imagine this season if we would have had TJ Jones as our number 3 receiver?
Oh my God.
Yikes.
And that, of course, means with all that cleared out, we can look to some of the guys in the practice squad, including one who was called up. So I think we're saying that we're going to walk away from TJ Jones, probably pick up maybe another in the draft, but I'm saying, guys, the door is wide open here.
Let's just say it. Let's just
for Winnemucca's finest.
Yes.
Was a healthy scratch the entire time he was on the roster, but play Jace. Play Jace.
He's getting a lot of hype from Detroit Free Press's Dave Burkett right now.
In January.
But he's saying, like, that name was on the coach's lips a lot all year, and they liked what they saw out of him.
I'm surprised he wasn't picked off the practice squad, but, he's safe now. And there is probably, I mean, if he does what he does last preseason, and he puts in good work in like camp and OTAs, there, I mean, and with everything else we've kind of lined up here, that, you know, maybe you don't have Anquan Boldin back, you probably don't bring back TJ Jones, who knows what the future is for Andre Roberts. Like, there is enough room here that you can start thinking about potentially Jace Billingsley full-time Detroit Lion.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean about Andre Roberts being replaceable. Like, Jace Billingsley, he could return kicks. He could return punts. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, that's still kind of to be proven. Did he have the kickoff return touchdown in preseason? I can't remember if it was him or someone else.
That was Dwayne Washington.
Oh, that was Dwayne Washington. That's right. I think it's worth mentioning. I mean, he got called up from the practice squad with 1 or 2 weeks left in the season. At the time, we all thought it was because I think Andre Roberts was injured. Maybe it was because they were protecting him. Maybe it's because they didn't want him to get picked off that practice squad.
That could be it too.
Kind of like what they did with Jake Rudock from the Bears.
Yep.
That's your number one quarterback throwing to your number one receiver next year.
Oh, I hate you.
Hey, hold on. You know what? It was a really good move to keep Jake Rudock, because that means that the Bears can now draft Mitch Trubisky with the third pick. So that's a great move by Quinn.
Can I be honest? I don't understand the hype around Trubisky. I don't. I'm sorry. I don't. Maybe it's because I don't watch North Carolina football, though. Like, that might be it.
I think only Eric Ebron does.
All right. Well, I think that's enough on the wide receivers. We've done our review. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, the 49ers did something really stupid, and we're going to talk about it. That's next. All right. Continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast. We would be remiss if we did not talk about this. This was the big story from last night.
The Pro Bowl!
Wasn't the Pro Bowl. No, it's the 49ers deciding to... They're not content with just basically having their new taxpayer-funded Santa Clara Stadium and just sucking. They have to suck really hard. And that's why Jed York went out and got Fox analyst and former NFL safety John Lynch to be the new general manager of the storied San Francisco 49ers.
This story is so funny to me for so many reasons.
It's so fucking stupid.
Before we get to the, you know, M squared comparisons, this is a team that went through like a really long, arduous process of interviewing a lot of well-respected names like Elliot Wolf and just like, you're like, okay, they're doing their due diligence. They're gonna get an okay candidate, maybe a good candidate. But then you just started to see like dominoes starting to fall, and this whole thing falling apart. Like suddenly, no one was coming in for second interviews, and all was kind of quiet on the front. And then just Sunday night, out of nowhere, it's like, by the way, John Lynch is our GM. See you later. And I was like, what? Wait, come back. What did you just say? Are you kidding me?
This is so goddamn stupid. You remember that interview with 49ers owner Jed York, where someone asked him dead to his face, like, well, what happens when the owner's underperforming? And he says something like, well, we don't fire owners in the NFL. And it's kind of like, maybe there's some truth to that, because holy God, this is a team that there has been no, like, okay, Lions fans, I know out there, you guys like to blame the Fords for a lot of things. And tortured as you are over the decades, the only thing left that you think is the problem are the Fords, and thus we must be rid of the Fords. This is what looks like when an owner is just batshit insane.
Yeah.
Where you go from 4 years ago, where you had the best coach in football in Jim Harbaugh, probably one of the best coaches out there, taking you to a Super Bowl in the middle of three NFC championship appearances, and you get rid of him. You basically run him out of town. You decide to keep in his interim some just, I don't know, someone off the streets in Jim Tomsula. Then you go and get Chip Kelly, and that looks right. And then you fire the general manager and Chip Kelly both in the same year. And then it's John Lynch. And by the way, your coach is maybe Kyle Shanahan. If he decides he wants to stick with Atlanta after the Super Bowl, you're fucked. You're really fucked.
I don't think that's going to happen based on everyone's saying. Oh my God, if it happens, I'm going to eat up all that schadenfreude because it's going to be ridiculous, but I'm pretty sure it's going to happen.
But I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it can, because like, you know, maybe he sees this John Lynch thing, and I know like he and John Lynch, like, I don't know. I don't actually know their history. I've heard they've got a little bit of a history or something. I don't know if it's good or bad.
But. With Kyle Shanahan's dad, Mike Shanahan, Mike Shanahan coached John Lynch back in the Broncos days.
Right, right. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I just, I don't see that as a guarantee. That is a lot, that is a very big thing to try to pin all your hopes and dreams on, is the guarantee that Mike Shanahan decides Kyle Shanahan decides to come to San Francisco and doesn't change his mind in the 11th hour.
What I found so just tasty about all of this was when York mentioned that John Lynch reminded him of John Elway.
Oh my God.
Because John Elway ran that Arena Football League team. But I don't understand how the comparison works because John Lynch has no front office experience.
This is what has made me so happy today, because the Twitter account Old Takes Exposed, all morning they were digging up quotes of what people were saying when Matt Millen was hired. And I was like, ooh, this is a bold, out-of-the-box thinking. This is a risky move, but this is exactly what the franchise needed. And now you look at what people are saying about this move, and it's the exact same thing.
And it's even more baffling because it's like, you can't even pull that move because, like, okay, for the Lions, they don't have that history. We're talking about the 49ers here. Like, the 49ers have, like, a good deal of history that someone can at least point to in various degrees, but holy crap, like, how can it be anything but the owner just, like, just seemingly insane here?
I don't know. There's clearly an ownership problem that I've never seen before, because people are turning down. I mean, it hasn't been said officially, but it certainly seems like people, like some of these GM candidates, were turning down second interviews because they just don't want to work for this guy.
I mean, if it was one thing, it was just a craven, like, okay, we've got our Santa Clara Stadium. We are bilking all these San Francisco billionaires, tech startup guys, out of their money for these overpriced suite boxes that we've set up with our new stadium, which is being paid for by the people of Northern California. Like, that's one thing. But now it's like, yeah, it's that part. It's that it's like you can't even find someone very staid, very plain, to just kind of take over a general manager and just like coast through mediocrity. You've gone, it's like you're trying to go major league here. Like, this is the plot to Major League. You're trying to go as bad as you can go for some godforsaken reason.
Did we even talk about how his contract is for 6 years?
No, we didn't.
Six goddamn years.
6 years. Like, I was reading a mock draft earlier that just came out today, and it goes, well, I don't know, draft Deshaun Kizer number two, because you got 6 years. Let's just swing for the fences. That's the kind of attitude that you should have. Number two pick, just go for the home run. You're swinging with an Aubrey Huff bat if you do that.
Oh, geez. You had to bring him up.
What? He played for the San Francisco Giants.
I know he did, but he did.
It was the San Francisco connection. What is Aubrey Huff in the news? I'm sorry. Hey, guys, we should get back to work.
Okay. Well, what is the work here? Is like just like I don't understand what's wrong with this. What's wrong with the 49ers? I don't. And like, I can't find any good way to spin it without seeming like a hack. I can't. There's no way here.
Well, why? I want to know why there is so much secrecy. Like, why did we never hear about John Lynch being an option? Like, why didn't we hear about the interview process? Why was it all of a sudden dropped out of the blue? Was it because if the media had time to run with it, it would have built up so much negative steam? It's not like, I don't think Jed York is the kind of guy who would be like, I'm going to let the media influence what I'm doing, because clearly he doesn't give two shits about what he's doing in that, you know, running that organization. But like, I mean, can you guys explain it? I can't explain it.
The only thing I can explain is that rich people are really stupid. Like, there's a myth in this country that a lot of rich people, like, because they have money, it's that Mr. Show sketch. It's like, you know, I have more money than you, thus I'm smart. It's like, no, like a lot of these guys, especially a guy like Jed York, he got handed the team by his dad. He is a diaper shitting fail son. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's been coasting on this money because it's impossible to lose money on football in this country if you have an NFL team. And this is the result. This is the result. Like, eventually you just think, I'm smart, I know what I'm doing, and you hire John Lynch. I don't know. And I'm not going to say, hey, maybe there's the possibility he like just swings for the fences, because that gives it way too much credit. This is going to fail, and this is going to fail really bad. And it's going to crater one of the most popular and one of the more storied franchises in the NFL.
Yeah, I've been racking my brain, and the only theory I can come up with is that Kyle Shanahan is both a done deal and going to be the real mastermind behind building this roster.
And but someone still has to work the phones and, like, you know, make the deals.
Yeah, and if that's the case, I don't know why you give him a 6-year contract. That's the part I can't fit into this weird puzzle. It's weird, it's kind of funny, but I also kind of feel a little bad. But I've also ran into 49ers fans, and they're not the greatest people in general. So
no, that's the one positive thing. But still,
I think I've gone on record, and I'll stand by it, that I felt more threatened at the two 49ers Lions games that I've been than the one Raiders game that I went to in the black hole.
This isn't going to end well. I mean, I think you said that, Chris, but it's not going to end well, because John Lynch is going to get a 6-year contract to run this team. But the only thing we've seen from Jed York is that he's a really, really impatient person.
Yes. Yeah, that was going to be my question. Do you think he makes it those 6 years?
No.
No, they're going to be paying him off the books, and I'm pretty sure John Lynch knew that. I'm pretty sure 6 years is because of John Lynch. Lynch knew that he could get free money.
Isn't the thing, too, like, Matt Millen, didn't he, at the time that he accepted the GM position, he said that he wasn't qualified for it? I'm pretty sure that he admitted to William Clay Ford Sr. that he was not at all qualified for that position, but he took it anyways because...
Sure.
I mean, there's just a certain type of clout. Like, you can be a Fox announcer, that's great, that's fine. But, like, if you get put in charge of an NFL franchise, well, all of a sudden now, like, you're Geppetto. Like, you get to pull all the strings. Like, you get to be the guy who, say this thing does work out for whatever reason. I mean, you talk about how, you know, this has the potential to absolutely crater Chris. They went 2-14 last year, and they lost 13 games in a row. Like, they're in pretty bad shape right now.
It can go worse.
Maybe, yeah, absolutely.
The way it can go worse is they can start losing games to the Los Angeles Rams.
Yes, yes, that could happen, and that would be terrible. That'd be no good. But at the same time, by the same account, if you're 2-14, you have a lot more room to move up than you do down, I think.
I mean, like, where's the ceiling there? 5 wins? 6 wins? I don't see it going more than, in any given season, 6 wins.
They have $100 million in salary cap and 10 draft picks. And they have the number 2 pick in the draft. As long as they don't screw up the number 2 pick in the draft, maybe they'll start heading in the right direction. There's an awful lot of things they have to do to fix that roster, though, because a lot of those San Francisco players ended up retiring early. Oh, boy, this isn't going to end well. God. But, no. I mean, I would root for them, but I already have an NFC team. It's the Lions. And I have an AFC team, too. That's the Browns.
I can't say, the Browns don't play in the NFC. What are you talking about?
You want to get on some mailbag?
Sure.
All right, let's do it.
Mail time.
All right, before we get into the mailbag on the Pride of Detroit podcast, we do this every time we get a new review on iTunes, we will read it. We've got some shenanigans that have happened, apparently, though. Jeremy, do you want to fill us in?
Sure. Well,
wait, why do you... Hold on. I think that each party should be able to speak their point.
No, but these reviews were left by Jeremy Reisman. So I want to hear his story.
Yeah, good point.
Both of them were left by Jeremy Reisman.
Well, there are two reviews that were given at the exact same time, but from different accounts. One we've seen before called Bovada King 69, which is odd, because I'm pretty sure they left a review before. And another one, Zed is Dead Baby 29. And they both start out with, "My name is Jeremy Reisman."
Well, Jeremy, why don't you tell us what you wrote?
I do not feel like reading this review because it was clearly not written by me. I think maybe someone else might be more apt to read this, maybe in more of like an author tone, maybe fits the writing a little better.
I don't think so. I think that part of every single plug you do for reviews each week is that you will read anything.
We'll read.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll read. Chris, do you want to read it? Because I don't. My throat is a little bit hoarse.
I'm not even going to try to do a Jeremy voice. I'll just read it.
No, you should do a Jeremy voice.
I can't. Don't. My stomach is eating itself right now. I don't need this in my life. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I would like all of you to tune in this coming Sunday at 7:30 Eastern to watch the Royal Rumble on the WWE Network. It's going to be an absolute slobber knocker. Also, in addition to that, I want to take this opportunity to say that Spider-Man is one of the most compelling coming-of-age stories in modern storytelling. The context of Peter Parker's life resonates with me deeply, and I am such a better man for learning what it means to be responsible. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you for posting it twice.
Lawsuits in the mail.
Can we talk about the Royal Rumble? Come on, Ryan, this is our time.
Yeah, let's do it. Come on. What do you want to talk about the Royal Rumble?
Oh, there's another review, you jerks.
I just want Cena and Styles to fight forever. That's all.
Yeah, I will definitely watch more Cena and Styles, but I definitely need Roman Reigns and I need The Undertaker and I need them to fight until Roman Reigns becomes a full-blown heel.
This feels like waiting for the Cena heel turn. It's like I don't think either are going to come ever.
Maybe.
Like, I'm sorry.
But if booking decides to put those two in the ring together, Reigns and Taker, and Reigns goes over on Taker, they can't deny that that's like the biggest heel thing in the world to do to end The Undertaker's career.
Problem is that Taker's one of those wrestlers I feel like he needs to keep cashing checks. He wants to keep cashing checks.
I mean, with his physical state, yeah, it seems like he's kind of just along for the ride, but...
Yeah, pretty much. So the question is, when is his last? Is he going to go out that well scripted at a WrestleMania? I don't think so. I think his exit will come suddenly.
It's a valid point. I mean, if he still had the WrestleMania streak going, if Lesnar wouldn't have broken it a couple years ago, then maybe WrestleMania could be, if he would have shockingly lost like this year, if this would have been his first loss and Reigns pins him in the middle of the ring, 1, 2, 3, and then he just, all of a sudden vanishes from all WWE-related programming. That would have worked, but I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know. I thought... I'm not looking forward to if the heavyweight title is going to be Cena Orton. You don't think it is, though? Yeah.
No, I don't think it is, because keep this in mind, too. Next month, well, February, so, they have the SmackDown pay-per-view Elimination Chamber. And part of the stipulation for the Elimination Chamber is that the belt's going to be on the line. And there's going to be, however, I think there's 6 people that get loaded up into pods, and it's a really big, dumb, stupid match that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense and whatever. But Cena's going to be in there, and there's going to be 5 other competitors. So I don't know. Maybe you can take the belt off Cena. I don't know. But then you have to figure out who Cena's going to wrestle. Maybe Cena and Taker are going to wrestle. I have no idea. Usually Royal Rumble provides a lot of answers, and the only answer it provided last night was that Randy Orton is the number one contender for the title. That's it.
And it's going to be the SmackDown title. It's not going to be the Raw title, because this is the weirdness. Unless he does pull like one of those things we've been thinking about, maybe they try to, fight Raw and SmackDown fight for each other's belts or something. But, I don't know. we've completely killed Jeremy. Let's talk about this other review, which provides a question that leads into our mailbag.
By the way, if you've been skipping for 15 seconds drastically over the past 2 minutes, you can stop now.
I don't understand why you have such an aversion to this.
I don't either, because it's really just two people who really enjoy something, and Jeremy's like, I don't want people to have fun or enjoy things.
You guys can create a separate podcast. That's fine. You can have your own little bubble.
The people want this.
People do want this.
How about we get some reviews? I want some actual reviews from
the
actual
other one
people.
Is from
oh, do
Ti-
you?
Titus Young Sr., please read and answer 5 stars. Why does Jim Caldwell wear 2 watches? If you have already addressed this, what podcast was it covered in? Also, favorite and least favorite Lions beat writer. I'll take it off the air. Well, you will get the second part off the air completely. We are not answering it. We have answers to it, but we're not answering it.
We definitely have answers to it.
We have answers. We have ironclad answers.
You're going to have to glean them from our perspective Twitter accounts. I've drawn my line in the sand pretty clearly over the past week or two.
Yeah, I subtweeted while you were doing that. I mean, if you came out eventually to what I hope is reality at some point, which is the Pride of Detroit Podcast live show, and asked us, we will tell you. I hope one day to make that a reality. I hope one day to. Unfortunately, like all of the dates we have so far, like I wanted to do it over the draft, and instead I think all of us are going to Philadelphia except for like Jeremy. So,
Daddy's gotta work. But to answer his other question,
why did you just call yourself Daddy?
Shut up. That didn't happen. All right. So
that was in October. That was
yes, the
episode...
October 25th episode entitled "Is Matthew Stafford MVP Material?" Sad face.
Yes. The immediate episode after that was kind of the wrap up from that when we had all of the Jim Caldwell memes come in, but the 25th is Matthew Stafford MVP material. That's when Ryan Matthews first pointed it out that Jim Caldwell wears 2 watches, and you were just at a loss.
I did a little bit of research to dig up to see if he's ever talked about it, and the beat writers have brought it up a couple times with him, and the only answer he's given is that one of them is a gift. That's it. That's his entire explanation for it. So,
that's all I need. That's all I want.
So
I'm
gift,
so glad.
But he doesn't trust it. It's a gift, but he doesn't trust the watch that was gifted to him as much as the other watch. The gift was probably the Shinola, right?
I mean, it's kind of like when, you know, you get like a weird shirt from a relative. Like, you'll wear it when you're around that relative, but you don't really want to wear it afterward.
Wow, Jeremy, you're really nice. You're really nice. I don't do that. It's like destined to be a pajama shirt.
That's fair.
All right. Let's get to rest of the mailbag now, shall we? Not too much here that really caught my eye, but let's actually start with a question I had from last week that I did not get to do. It's from my friend Hunter Cook, which I can't even say his Twitter handle because it's actually his name spelled backwards, and it's Cook with an E at the end, but... he asks the POD cast, can you please stop sending carrier pigeons to my wife?
I left my wife.
My wife left me.
Yeah. Stop emailing my wife. All right. James at Cookie991, anyone excited about the new Prison Break?
I wasn't excited about the original Prison Break. what would make me excited about this new version of it? I don't know. I never watched Prison Break.
I didn't either. I'm the TV geek, and no, I didn't watch that. I didn't know they were bringing it back. I would be slightly more excited about the 24 revival, but Jack Bauer's not even going to be in it, so I'm out.
So this is the thing about Prison Break, is that I think from what I've gleaned from just hearing people talk about it, that they break out of prison in the first season, so what are they doing afterwards?
They find out the entire country is a prison. They have to break out of that. It's kind of like a Russian nesting doll. It's just they break out of one prison, they find out they're in a larger prison. And they just have to keep breaking out of bigger and bigger prisons.
It's more like that Rick and Morty episode. The simulations inside simulations.
Hey, hold on. If this is actually how the show is handled, I'm all in.
I wish. Or maybe it could be like Super Jail or something.
That Cartoon Network show?
Yeah. You never watched that? It is a complete, it is a stoner trip. It is an acid trip cartoon show. It will freak you out.
So it'll freak me out more. Will it freak me out more than that show with the dog?
Oh, the devil dog. I don't want to. Pickles? Mr. Pickles?
Mr. Pickles.
I shouldn't have even said the word. And now that we've said his name three times, he's probably going to appear in our dreams. If you're listening, do not even Google Mr. Pickles. Please.
Don't do it.
I beg of you. And I'm not even kidding. You're going to regret it if you do.
Ironically enough, this isn't one of those Jim Caldwell things where we're begging you like not to do it, but we secretly want you to do it. Don't do it for your own good, for your own safety, for your own sanity, for the ability to sleep at night. Like, don't do it.
It's just, it's not one of those things you want to do. Okay, let's see here. What else do we have? Question from Smog's Gold Coin. Is it okay to talk about wrestling now? If so, what is your opinion of the Royal Rumble and NXT TakeOver?
Not a real question.
Hold up. Because we didn't talk about NXT TakeOver. God, we talked about Rumble. It. We Are need to talk about me? The TakeOver.
Ryan. You're banned.
Muted. Oh, man, hold on. So I definitely thought that Shinsuke Nakamura was my favorite thing about wrestling. But my favorite thing about wrestling is Bobby Roode.
That was a dream match. I'm just sad that they did not match their entrances from... Both of them, I thought, had better entrances during TakeOver Brooklyn 2.
Sure. Yeah.
Because, Nakamura came out with the violinist, Roode descended from the heavens.
Right. I mean, how do you really top that, though?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's really hard to top that, but, I mean, would you even say that that match on Saturday was glorious?
It was glorious. Glorious! No, I won't give in!
It was great. I mean, I can't really speak to much of the rest of the card. I marked out
I thought the women's match I liked. It was a fatal four-way. And
did Asuka win?
Yes, she retained.
Good, good. I like her a lot.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
I liked... Okay, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I'm not sure when she transitions to the main roster or how that transition ends up working or what they need to... maybe do with her for that transition to work smoothly and for her to, you know, completely integrate into the main roster. But she's great where she is. Like, I really don't want her to move.
But yep. I would say the one thing I learned from NXT, I haven't heard of this stable because I think last time I watched was TakeOver Brooklyn, this stable called Sanity.
Oh, I saw that match. Yeah. I had not heard of them either.
Well, like it's an intergender stable because one of the women from Sanity was in the four-way for the women's Nikki Cross.
Okay.
And then Eric Cross was in one of the earlier matches, I think, for
wrestling Ty Dillinger.
Ty Dillinger, yeah. But I like the style for the stable. It's got some Bullet Club vibe to it, but I think as one of my friends put it on Twitter, they kind of look like an anti-fascist gang or something. They're all dressed out in black with like hoodies and masks and everything. It looks like they're going to go out and punch Richard Spencer on the streets.
I was kind of getting like a hybrid, like Bullet Club, Wyatt Family kind of feel from them in a way.
It's like anarchist Bullet Club.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 I could get on board with that. But the one last thing I want to say is when it comes to the Rumble, I was really just kind of disappointed that we didn't get a Samoa Joe appearance. Because hold on, what if we get Samoa Joe and John Cena at WrestleMania?
Oh my God. Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
I mean, if John Cena loses the belt at Elimination Chamber, that opens him up to work with somebody, and that somebody could be Samoa Joe.
I'd love Joe with SmackDown too. That would be fantastic.
Oh yeah. He'd be perfect for that brand.
Yeah. I kept thinking he'd come out during the Rumble. He would be one of the surprise entrances, but they had to waste it on Enzo. So,
right. Hey, Jeremy, who did you want to see make an appearance at the Royal Rumble, but just didn't make it to the ring?
There can't be more than four people that are listening that even know what NXT is. This is bullshit. You guys have talked about wrestling more than you've talked about Jace Billingsley in this podcast, and that's a goddamn travesty.
All right, fine. We'll go to the football questions then, asshole. GV42, if it's available, is a Pro Bowl Matt Prater jersey a solid pickup?
No.
Can we talk about wrestling?
This is exciting football stuff you want to talk about here, man.
I have a better Pro Bowl question, but the answer to that one is no. Well, let's not support the Pro Bowl, even though we want to support Matt Prater.
Yeah, just go buy a Matt Prater jersey.
Yeah. And those, I do not like the look of any of those Pro Bowl jerseys.
They always look weird. They're like that matte kind of neutral gray kind of shit. Like, I don't know what they're supposed to be looking like. They look just awful.
The Pro Bowl hasn't been the same since Sean Taylor.
Or the Heartbreak Kid.
Back-to-back Royal Rumble winner, 1995 and 1996. How you doing?
Duke at Luke Mac 11. Do the Lions have the best special teams in the league?
It was really good this year, and I think Football Outsiders had them, what, sixth? I think. In DVOA on special teams.
I'll believe you. I'd buy that for a dollar.
I think they were probably... I would list them a little better, but I can't say that I'm that knowledgeable on everyone else's special teams. They were good enough. I don't know if they were best, but they were certainly at my expectations, if not... Well, exceeded my expectations, for sure.
Here's the thing about special teams, is when I think about it, I usually think... first about who is returning kicks and punts for you. Like, so when you were like, the Lions could be higher. I don't really pay attention to a lot of other teams, special teams. That's true. But I saw Tyreek Hill return enough kicks and punts for touchdowns that I know that the Chiefs probably have a better special teams than the Lions do. And I don't know. With that being said, do you think that the Lions' success on special teams had more to do with Andre Roberts? Or more to do with, you know, guys like Don Carey or Johnson Batamosi or Don Muleback, who is really good at, you know, just long snapping?
I mean, I almost think that kick returning has taken a back seat in terms of importance in special teams to punting and field goals. Like, those are all much more important. Extra points now are tougher to come by. So I think in terms of that, Lions' punt coverage was good. Their punt returning was fine. I mean, outside of the two touchdowns, Roberts didn't do that much, but two touchdowns is two touchdowns, and Prater was more than adequate. He wasn't the best, but he was great. So I'm happy with the special teams there, and in terms of kickoff, we didn't have any splash plays either way, so I'm great.
All right, another question here from Chim Richels. The most annoying fan base in the NFC North? Well, this is going to be biased. Why don't we just expand it to the whole NFC? Because I'm kind of riffing off of what Jeremy was talking about with the 49ers fans he ran into.
I still think it's within the division. I can't stand Bears fans. I really can't. Sorry, Robert Zaglinski, you're an all right guy. But, man, when I took my We Own the Bears sign to Drafttown last year, a lot of Bears fans didn't think that was very funny. They did not take too kindly to the fact that I had a big white poster board that had hashtag We Own the Bears on it. They did not find a lot of humor in that.
Well, can I posit this theory to you? Because we are going to Philadelphia for the draft, and we have beaten the Eagles now three times in a row?
At least 2 years in a row, because we beat them on Thanksgiving, and then we beat them last year.
But I think the last one before that was a snowball.
Oh, it was
game
a snowball. I think it's three out of the last four, but I could be wrong.
Do we own the Eagles? Is that your question?
Well, we did kind of lead a podcast with that. If we took a sign that's like, we own the Eagles, what do you think our chances are getting out of Philly alive?
I mean, I had this vision in my mind that Andrew Cotto is just a big, beefy dude, and he could really protect all of us. And if that's not the case, then... I don't know if we get out of the Sheraton alive.
I'd say that sign lasts no longer than 5 minutes before it is ripped to shreds.
See, there's a lot. I mean, across the entire NFC, there's just so many good options here, because the NFC also includes Washington fans who, I mean, just pick your poison with them. It includes the Eagles fans, includes Packers and Bears fans.
Cowboys fans.
Cowboys. Yeah, I was gonna say, yep. That's the elephant in the room there.
And the 49ers. So, I don't know. You've got a lot of good entries here. Saints fans low-key can be pretty out there.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I haven't really come face-to-face with a lot of Bears fans or Packers fans, even though they come to a lot of Lions games, and I've never been in their house, but I've grown so much disdain for Packers fans over this season alone, with how immature they reacted when Aaron Rodgers was quote unquote struggling earlier in the year, and then how pompous they were when they pulled off the 8-game winning streak or whatever it was. And now, oh God, I don't know. Just also the way they handled, you know, calling out of holdings and stuff like that. I don't know. I don't like anything about the Packers anymore. At first I thought maybe I liked the whole fan-owned team. And
that's a
Aaron
lie.
Rodgers.
That's a lie.
Yeah.
That's like a huge lie, because you can't actually, like,
it's like owning a star. I know.
Another Pro Bowl question from Blake Berry. Should the Pro Bowl add another skills test? My vote is a hot dog or chicken wing eating contest. Now, that sounds kind of far-fetched, but I know for a fact that the college football bowl game in Nashville, the Music City Bowl, they do have a chicken eating contest for both teams before the game itself.
I honestly think that's a good idea. Like, the skills competition, which I did watch on YouTube, not live, was somewhat entertaining.
I heard the dodgeball was fun.
Yeah, it was. It was fun seeing Alex Smith like throw a ground ball at the opponents, because he should not be in that competition.
Or an NFL quarterback?
Well, I'm trying to be nice. But, like, who would not want to see Vince Wilfork in a chicken wing eating contest right now?
Oh, my God.
I would pay $20 admission just to see that, just to see him compete against himself.
I'd pay $40 to see Vince Wilfork in the ring against Mark Henry.
Oh, fuck you. You are the worst.
How you doing? What is it, though, about the Pro Bowl and all these skills contests that aren't actually, like, football stuff, though? Like, I don't know, because, like, the first thing I think about when I think NBA All-Star Weekend is three-point shooting contest, the slam dunk contest. First thing I think about with Pro Bowl skills contests is dodgeball.
Well, they're trying new things out. Dodgeball, sure. I think, was a success. They had some drone airdrop, which was not a success. But they also had, like, a QB skills competition, which they used to have, which I thought was really cool. And I don't care if they do that. I don't care if they do chicken winging contests. I want to see these guys do something fun.
All right.
And it's not play football half-assedly.
Yeah, I just don't want to see them play football. Like, I just watched you play football for 17-plus weeks. I don't want to watch you do that anymore. Go do something else. And hey, why not just make the Pro Bowl game like a game of flag, like flag football?
I'm cool with that. I still probably wouldn't watch, but it's better.
I feel that as long as the NFL remains the one North American sport that has its all-star game at the end of the season rather than in the middle of the season, I'm just never going to give a damn about it.
How about a karaoke contest?
Oh my God.
Yes. Take
the Pro Bowl to Tokyo. Just take it to Tokyo. Fuck Orlando. Yeah. Or like put it back in Honolulu. It makes sense there, but like for the love of God, not Orlando. I know ESPN is Disney. I know ESPN is the mouse, but no one wants to go to fucking Orlando.
I know, and that's the thing too, is that with WrestleMania being in Orlando this year.
The road to WrestleMania.
I'm just picturing, I want Matt Prater, Sam Martin, and Don Muehlbeck singing Africa by Toto.
I was going to say, what do you think Matt Prater sings when he goes up to the jukebox?
I'm watching Rumble still, and I just forgot just what a fucking belly Undertaker has now. Like, he's taking off his singlet before fighting Roman Reigns, and I just realize as he strips down his singlet, it's like, oh my God, he's got a beer belly.
Okay. This is the thing, though, is that the optics of seeing Reigns and Undertaker square off, it looks like a dad and his son had too much to drink during the holidays and now they're squaring off. So that's why I need that at WrestleMania.
Well, that what was Jerry saying the whole time during the John Cena AJ Styles fight? Oh, look at those titties on Cena.
What? Jerry was saying that?
Yeah, Jerry Mallory was like, man, John Cena's grown a large pair of titties.
I don't even see. This is why I kind of hate wrestling.